Good afternoon, colleagues. I'm happy to welcome you here. We are here today, just like every year, to discuss a number of important matters related to the development of the mineral and raw materials base in Russia and abroad. I would like to thank the TASS news agency for the great premises they provided for us. I think it is of huge importance that we are doing this today, not at our office, but here at TASS. It's a way for us to unite all of you journalists here at your territory. So what changes did we have? Gazprom became the number one company. I think that's the key achievement that we have delivered. That became possible due to the fact that in all of its areas of operations, Gazprom is the leader. So by combining all the parameters that we have, Gazprom indeed became the number one business, and we received recognition from ratings agencies, so it is not our internal assessment. And now it is an achievement recognized by the ratings agency and the global community as well. We have outstanding results in our production. We are also very strong in gas exports. We have the longest gas transmission system worldwide. And we also ensure reliable supplies to consumers both in Russia and abroad. And that's something that no other company can achieve. Gazprom has seen quite a challenging winter this season. And we did not disconnect supplies to any of our consumers. We did not even limit supplies to any of our consumers, despite the fact that the winter was 1 month longer than the previous winter. Actually, it was longer than the winter the year before that. So we provided gas to Russian and foreign consumers in the amount they required. We ensured record high supplies of gas abroad, and you may well know the figure. And also, on the 2nd of March, and technically this is spring, not winter, both here in Russia and in Europe, March was still a winter month. And we are always ready for that. We are prepared for that. But by contrast, gas transmission companies and also consumers in Europe and operators of underground gas storage facilities in Europe were not ready for that scenario for a very cold March. And here I would like to say that by the time the injection of gas should have begun, our underground gas storage facilities in Ukraine and in other places abroad were empty. And I would like to once again highlight the fact that we provided the 100% amount of what our consumers requested from us. And that's a great achievement indeed, considering the harsh winter that we had. We have once again proven that we can be very flexible in responding to all the needs for gas that come from our consumers, both in Russia and abroad. We are also very flexible in responding to any changes in demand. That was once again evidenced by this winter performance that we had. So going forward this year, our target is to get prepared for the autumn and winter period. we see there is a very strong trend in the market for demand for gas. We see that demand going up, especially if we compare the figures that we had the winter before that one and this one. Those are very different. So we have every evidence to say that the demand will be at least in line with what we saw last winter. So in 2018, we are also set to cover all the demand from consumers in Russia and abroad. And we are set to achieve at least the same results of gas supplies than last year. These are our key targets. So what is Gazprom doing today? That's what I would like to tell you. And now I am ready to take your questions. And we will also be meeting with you in early June. Good afternoon. Let me introduce all the other participants in our press conference today. Vitaly Markelov, Deputy Chairman of the Management Committee, delivered the introductory speech. Also participating are members of the Management Committee and heads of department, Oleg Aksutin and Vsevol Cheripanov, Head of Department Andrei Skripniuk, and First Deputy Head of Department Vasily Nikitin. Now let us pass to the question and answer session. We shall begin with questions from St. Petersburg. Please introduce yourselves. And please remember that we will have separate press conference for the Far Eastern projects. So that will be a separate event. Evgenia Sokolova, I have a traditional question about your guidance for production this year. 475.8 billion cubic meters, that's what is approved. But you're saying that the trend is positive, so is there a chance that following the second quarter it will be revised upwards? The second question is about the second stream of the Turk Stream. When will decision be made? As for the production guidance, you are right in saying that the Management Committee and the Board of Directors approved the forecast of 475.8 billion cubic meters of gas supplies this year. But as I've said, the winter was somewhat different from what we are used to. So as early as today, we will be adding 16 billion cubic meters to that guidance. We can see the results of the first quarter and of the second quarter as well, and we are considering a revision upwards of that guidance. The factors that I have mentioned, that underground gas storage facilities in Russia and abroad require more gas injections than last year. So we see that our gas production must be improved at least by that amount. Does that answer your question? The second question on Turk Stream. Again, I must say that we will have a separate press conference on expert supplies. But we can give you the answer right away. Yes, we can definitely do that. Here, I would like to stress the fact that in Russia, gas trunk lines have already been constructed. That's 31.5 billion cubic meters to supply gas to Turk Stream. And there are also gas compressor stations that are ready. As for the C section, It's the first string of Turk's Dream. It's mostly completed today. So it's only the Turkish part, the Turkish shore, and the construction of the acceptance terminal that is underway. That's the first string. And as for the second string, we are to high extent ready with that. In the Russian part, we have completed the bulk of the construction. As for the Turkish part, first string is completed. All the approvals have been received, and we can embark on the construction of the second string. As for the gas trunk line passing across the Turkish territory, we are currently engaged in respective negotiations with our Turkish partners on that. And so far, we, as I've said, are in the negotiation stage. Thank you. Interfax, please. Anton Khlyshenko from Interfax. Mr. Markelov, the Kaliningrad will soon have the operating terminal for LNG. When will it finally become operational? And when will Marshal Vasilevsky arrive? Why is such a delay in place? Because it was actually planned for an earlier date. Yes, indeed, there was a delay in this project. The terminal is currently engaged in very active construction and installation works. That's Stoygaz Neftigaz. It's our Russian company that is involved in that. And the terminal will be constructed by the end of the fourth quarter this year. I cannot give you the precise date as of yet because a lot of will depend on the weather conditions. And as you understand, it is not something we can control, so it is external factors that will shape our progress. As for the Marshal Vasilevsky vessel, it was ready last year, but part of the equipment, the regasification equipment, unfortunately, was destroyed during operation. It was provided by Mitsubishi, and the company carried out an inspection. And following that, Gazprom, together with Hyundai, resolved to replace that equipment, and that is what we are doing right now. The production and installation process is underway, and Hyundai is to provide the vessel in November. RIA Novosti, Maria Grabar. I think it's to Mr. Cheripanov. Has Rosgazdobycha provided its plan to develop the Tambay group of fields, and what is the investment plan for that? Are you planning to sign into binding agreements with Rosgazdobycha, and when? There is no development plan for Tambay as of yet. Geological exploration is still in process. As for the commitments, that is, the memorandum signed last year, it states as follows. We are to look into the opportunities to jointly develop the Tambay group of fields, provide our concept for that. This work is actually underway right now, because last year we were busy adding new reserves to our Tambay field. So there was a significant change in our resource base. And that enables us to work more on our technology. And also where to use that gas for, it's also under discussion. There are a lot of options. First is to supply it to the unified gas supply system in Russia. But right now, following deliberations, we see that other options are also possible. So we are looking into all those options, and there is no specific project on the table yet. But we have a joint working group, and we meet regularly in accordance with schedule. So whenever we have any news, I will definitely communicate those, and I hope it will be by the end of the year. And also Simakovskaya and Severoparushnaya fields, those are the fields where we have development plans, but they are still subject to approval, but there is a draft plan that we already have. And the decision, the investment decision on those fields is expected in November this year, and for Tambay fields it is too early. At the end of the year, we are expected to complete our review of all the options and to put together the best option and to decide on where to go in terms of designing. That's what I think. That's my expert opinion here. But we still have a lot of work to do. We continue exploration on Tambay, around 7 wells right now. That's what we have there. Some of them are tested. So we have quite a lot of work to do. Thank you. I shall ask you to ask any follow-up questions using the microphone too. Question from Vedomosti, a follow-up question to the previous one. So if it's not supplies to the unified gas supply system, will it be LNG for Tambay? Yes, we are not excluding that. Next question. Last year, the committee said that Gazprom is planning to phase out capacities in the central corridor. What has been achieved so far? What is the actual capacity at the border of Russia and Ukraine? And what are you planning to decrease it to by the end of the year? Let me begin with the answer to that. You're right in saying that we announced earlier that we are phasing out capacities from the Uzhgorod corridor because we believe that those capacities will not have the demand because we see certain changes in our gas supplies. We started those efforts last year, and we have a program for the phasing out of those capacities, and we already embarked on that work. It is mostly related to Gazprom Transgaz Moscow and Gazprom Transgaz Nizhny Novgorod and Perm and Yugorsk. First of all, that will include the period until 2019. And that's what we are actually doing today. And we are also developing a program for a later period to do away with excess capacities that we have in the Nizhny Novgorod route. Their maintenance is quite a heavy item in the budget of Gazprom. So to improve our efficiency, we are actually implementing this project. Mr. Nikitin will be providing details. The program includes 60 compressor stations that will be phased out. In 2017, we completed the phasing out of a shop at Dolzhanskaya compressor station. This year, we are doing the same at Kurskaya and Valuki compressor stations. That's the area of responsibility of Gazprom Transgaz Moscow. And we are ready to decommission 23 compressor shops. That's the first train. It's 16 shops in near the Yugorsk. That's the old route that is currently used basically as a distribution route. And also several shops in Gazprom Transgas Nizhny Novgorod. It's not a very swift program because compressor station is a dangerous facility. We cannot simply close it at our own discretion. We need to have a review for that completed, and that's quite a lengthy exercise. Mr. Markelov, let me add, the program covers a total of 60 compressor shops decommissioned on that route, and also 430 kilometers of the linear section of the gas trunk line. We were also saying that our core producing region is moving from the Nadym Purtas to the Yamal Peninsula. So we're developing the northern corridor, Bavaninkovo-Ukhta and Ukhta-Turzhok. So it's also Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 for supplies to Europe. And that covers the central part of Russia as well. So if you look at that, you will see that there are capacities being excessive in the Uzhgorod area. We're moving them to the northern area. And that's obviously the most effective route to supply gas both to Russia and consumers abroad. The system of gas trunk lines for 120 atmospheres, the number of gas compressors is lower, so all that makes the system more effective. Besides, the route is shorter, and that means that the maintenance will cost us less as compared to the capacities constructed 20 or 30 years ago. A follow-up question on the transition from Nadym Purtas to Bavaninkovo. If you think about the gas processing plant in Ust-Luga, with the volumes coming from the Nadym Purtas, does that mean that until 2025 you will be transferring approximately the same amount from Bavaninkovo to that Ust-Luga terminal? When both projects are implemented, do you have the technical capacity to supply excess gas from Bavaninkovo to the central part of Russia without constructing any new pipes? As far as I can see, I doubt that there are enough capacities for about 40 billion cubic meters. Well, since we are making advance payments for that project, that means that apparently we do have the capacities required for that. Ethane-containing gas from Nadym Purtas will require separate gas trunk lines, and certainly the development of the base in the Yamal will also be coming together with the development of the gas transmission system. What is good about us is that we have a lot of opportunities and options in transporting gas to various destinations. Certainly, the gas from Yamal will come to its targeted consumers, and the gas from the other part will go to Ust-Luga in due course. We are planning to have that effort completed by the end of this year, and after that, we will be making investment decisions. So you're saying that it is the gas processing plant in Ust-Luga that you will be making an investment decision upon? No, it's actually a whole range of matters here, and that is included in there. So let's connect to Moscow. Good afternoon, colleagues. Anastasia Gorieva. Anastasia Gorjeva, Argus Media. Good afternoon. What was the maximum output during this winter season for Gazprom at Bovanenkovo? I mean, not the planned level, but the actual level that you delivered. And second, what is the maximum daily output planned for Gazprom this year? I mean, across the company in general and Bovanenkovo. Are you planning to revise those figures after the Tryandra field is put on stream, or will those stay unchanged? That's the first part of questions that I have. And there are also, and the last question of Bovanenkovo in May, if I'm not mistaken, you are supposed to commission a gas processing capacity there. That's around 30 billion cubic meters, if I'm not mistaken. How will it affect the potential output annually? So what will be your annual production at Bovanenkovo this year compared to around 82 billion last year? Okay, let us take your first part of questions. Indeed, the Bovanenkovo field has the strongest potential for us in our portfolio, and we are ramping up our capacity to produce gas from there. Today, we have capacity to produce 90 billion cubic meters annually. We have gas processing plant 1 and 2. They are currently at their full capacity. And we only produced 82 billion cubic meters. That's because of the seasonality factor. This year, not in May, but at the end of the year, we are launching our gas processing plant number 3, and we are taking our field to a new record high level of production. That's an increase by 30 billion. So that will make 115 billion cubic meters of annual production. Daily output during this winter was 262 million per year. And that is per day, and we are planning to certainly increase that amount after the facility number 3 is commissioned. Our output at Bovanenkovo, as I've been saying, depends on our revision of our production plans and targets. So above all, in line with that, we will be looking at our performance during the upcoming winter after the gas facility number 3 is commissioned. But before it is commissioned, we have the same facility, the same capacity. That's a maximum of 264. And next year, that will be 316 million. The second question was about peak production. That was 1.512 billion, and that was ahead of the target. Our plan for peak loads next year is 1.528 billion. So 1.528 billion is what you have planned. And the previous figure, was that the actual figure or the potential? No, that was the actual output that we delivered last winter. And a question about underground gas storage facilities. How are you planning to ramping up those capacities? How will it affect your daily output? And what underground gas storage facilities will be used to achieve your targets by the next autumn and winter period? This winter, our underground gas storage facilities have proved their importance and significance, and they actually covered the entire peak demand that we had. So the cold March was for us very smooth. And that was done using the gas accumulated from the underground gas storage facilities. And that proved that the March inventories that we had had its demand. And within the next few years, we are planning to replenish our gas in underground gas storage facilities. That's 72 billion cubic meters. And we are also engaged in developing our underground gas storage. Last year, we commissioned two facilities in the Kaliningrad gas storage. So today, we are injecting gas into those. So the capacity in the Kaliningrad gas storage will more than double. We're also commissioning this year the Volgogradsk gas storage. And there will be other gas storage facilities as well. We're developing that to move gas away from the Kasimovskaya underground gas storage facilities. And that will help us improve the capacity of our gas storage facilities at the beginning of the withdrawal season. We will have quite a significant increase this year. The Kaliningrad and Volgograd underground gas storage facilities ensure the their highest deliverability in terms of daily supplies. Follow up. That's 447 million per day. That's the amount planned for underground gas storage deliveries during winter. When are you planning production drilling in Yuzhno-Kirinsk? What is the depth of drilling you're planning? And what will be your main contractor for that field? So we are talking about drilling here, right? Yes, I mean the depth and the month. And if we talk about the contractor, I mean the general contractor for all the works on the field, if you have one. We start drilling at Yuzhno-Kirinskaya field, and we will be using our own drilling resources for that, using our platforms, which begin operating on the 15th of June. The period for drilling is quite short, so that will be done in parallel. We plan to be drilling in four wells. The drilling will be done to the top of the productive layer. Three wells will be drilled this year. The wells will be completed in due course with all the valve equipment installed on the seabed. After two wells are drilled, the equipment will be ready to move to another location. So everything is fine-tuned in a way that no streams of work interfere with each other to ensure all the standards and requirements of sea safety. In around October, we will complete our drilling season and we will have several wells drilled until the top of the productive layer. So next year, to that end, we will continue drilling and we will be looking at what we will see, and we will either continue our operations or suspend it. So that will depend on our investment cycle. Let me answer the question about operations on the field. Today we are completing our design stage, and that's the final part of the design stage, and after that we will decide on what to do next. Thank you, Vitaly Sokolov, Energy Intelligence. Good afternoon. My question is also about Yuzhno-Kirinskaya. As far as I understand, you're planning to drill until the productive layer next year. So if the decision is made to complete the construction of the wells, when are you planning to choose the contractor for the equipment for those wells to become operational? Thank you. Let me handle that question. You are correct in saying that we are very much dependent on the equipment. It's the so-called Christmas trees for the subsea equipment. If we can procure that equipment from the respective supplier, that equipment will be installed next year. If not, we will continue our drilling plan as per the concept we have outlined earlier until we have the equipment ready. I can imagine you will be asking us about the contractor, the supply of the equipment, and I can say that I believe it will be a Russian company. As for the producer of the equipment, we have already said that most likely for the first pilot project, that's from 12 to 8 pilot wells, it will be a foreign producer. A follow-up question, if I may. So you have not yet announced a tender for that equipment. When are you planning to announce the tender? We haven't announced the tender yet. RBC, Людмила Подобедова. I have the following question on underground gas storage and gas transmission. Independent producers are trying to negotiate new conditions to introduce government regulation, to introduce equal tariffs on the same conditions as Gazprom subsidiaries. Gazprom was against that proposal, so what is the current picture? And the second question, Gazprom was bargaining for discounts for large consumers and for potentially a larger quota on exchange trading. So what are the results here? Unfortunately, I must say, this is not the topic of our press conference. So next question is from Reuters. I have two questions. The first one is about the suspension of production at a number of fields. If you have those plans, what fields are those? Last year and the year before that, that was Kirinskaya, where output was suspended for 6 months. So what do you have this year? And the second question, what is the progress in negotiations with the Austrian Umfau regarding the asset swap? The second question is unfortunately outside of the scope of this press conference. Regarding the Yuzhno-Kirinskaya field, I've already said that we have revised our plans compared to what we had last year in terms of what field will be supplying the unified gas supply system. I cannot give you the precise figures right now, but certainly some of the fields will be suspended for repairs and maintenance. And basically that begins right tomorrow. And that covers both production and transportation assets that we have. As for the Kirinskaya field, you are right in saying that our Kirinskaya field operates to meet the demand coming from the Far Eastern consumers in the winter season. So today, our Kirinskaya field is currently out of operation, and the Sakhalin Khabarovsk-Vladivostok, that's because the level of demand for that gas requires. So we will be using that to meet demand in the Far East. As for the export supplies, we will have a separate press conference on that. Another question, will you have any supplies of maybe APG associated petroleum gas to the power of Siberia from independent producers, or are you insisting that it is only Gazprom's gas that will be coming to the pipeline? Well, actually, that question we will be discussing that on the press conference in June, but still let me answer that question. And if my answer is not enough, we will discuss that again. I don't have any news here. We have a contract signed with China's CNPC, and that states that it is Gazprom's gas that will be coming through the pipeline, and the supplies will start on the 20th of December next year. You are saying that there are proposals coming to Gazprom requiring that there should be other gas coming to the power of Siberia. Those ideas are currently in the process of negotiations and discussions, and no specific result is available yet. What shapes the number of wells that you plan to drill on Yuzhno-Kirinskaya by 2023? You've mentioned 8 to 12 wells. Why do you have that range? What does it depend on? And the second question, could you please give us more color on the working plan that you have to develop the Simakovskaya and Parusna groups of fields? Which of the groups will be developed first? And as of today, what is the year that you plan to start production? What production do you mean? That's Simakovskaya and Parusna groups of fields. In October and November, as far as I understand, you are supposed to make an investment decision. So can you please comment on the working plan? What do you have in that? Okay, let me handle the first question about Yuzhno-Kirinskaya, and Mr. Cheripanov will answer the second question. Kirinskaya and Yuzhno-Kirinskaya fields . These are the fields that cover the demand of our Far Eastern consumers. So So the projects that we have ready right now, those are considered for potential supplies from those two fields. And those are included in our figures for the Far East. A follow-up question, you mentioned of 8 to 12 production wells ready by 2023. When the first gas is already supposed to be produced. So I'm asking the rationale behind that 8 to 12 range in the number of wells. First, it's a draft development plan, so we will be looking at the production performance, the actual figures. So we will be looking at how many wells we will need to have drilled. And we will be looking at that at the moment when the wells will be commissioned. So if at the end of the year we commission 12 wells, it means that that production figures will be taken into account next year, not this year. And if we commission those in the middle of summer, that means that those figures will be taken into account this year. So that's purely commercial deliberations. So that will depend on how many wells are ready to provide to actually supply the gas. So that's why we have the range from 8 to 12. Mr. Markelov, let me add on that. As you see, the gas trunk line system in the Far East has a limited capacity. It's not the unified gas supply system that we have in the western part of Russia. So the consumers that we have in the Russian Far East, they need to have their gas provided within the time frame that is required. So we monitor the situation. We're doing that on a regular basis, and we see what projects are ready, and wells will be put on stream depending on the market demand. And a brief comment on your last question. When the Board of Directors approves the development plan, we will communicate that separately. But in general, I can say that the first field of that group, that's the Simakovskaya field, will be developing that field first and foremost because it has greater reserves. As you know, that process is quite expensive. We will need specialized equipment and platforms there, so first drilling will be from the shore. And by that, we will be accumulating some of our reserves using onshore structures. Any other questions in Moscow? We are now switching to St. Petersburg. Follow up on Sakhalin. Given that going forward you will be making decision on the third train of Sakhalin 3, the LNG plant, do you already have a plan to expand the Sakhalin pipeline? Because it obviously does not have the capacity required. So will that expansion be part of the third train project, or will that be a separate project? And what are the figures that you can comment on? I'm talking about the Trans-Sakhalin gas pipeline. That's 11.2 billion cubic meters, Mr. Markelov. That was designed for the first two trains of Sakhalin 3, so the third train will definitely need an expansion exercise. But again, As we've been saying, it will be covered in the next conference. So I'm just afraid that if I answer that question right now, we will have no questions coming at our next press conference. So in brief, Sakhalin Energy completed the study for the design of its gas transportation system development. The state review was positive. And the positive reviews also came for the LNG plant and for gas transmission as well. That includes construction of two new compressor stations that were part of the project previously. So that's how the project will be implemented, and we are also planning to expand our existing compressor stations. As for the third train construction at the LNG plant, together with the shareholders, we decided that the third train will be similar to the first two trains for us to simplify the maintenance procedures. And a follow-up on the gas transmission system in the European part of Russia. First, ethane-containing gas supplies to Ust-Luga. Do you have already the list of fields that will be used for those supplies? Because apparently not all fields have a high share of ethane in that gas. So what's the target share you are planning to have, and what's the route you will be using for that? Because right now you have supplies from the Nadym region, so will you have enough capacity for everything? We are currently developing a feasibility study for our investments in production and transmission assets, and we're planning to complete those by the end of the year. The Nadym-Protas fields will be connected to the gas collection system and then to gas transmission system. And that will be a separate system compared to other parts of the system. So those efforts that we will have will answer all your questions about production and transportation. As for the fields, we will be relying mostly on Novoringoyskoye field, that's Achimov deposit, and other deposits that are deeper down there. Right now, we are already producing that gas, but it simply goes to the single pipeline and mixed with all the other gas coming from other fields. But I think we can be more efficient by dedicating it into a separate pipeline. I believe we are taking no more questions about the eastern part of our project. RIA Novosti, what is the current stage of the Vonovisk and Voivodskoye fields? Both Gazprom and Lukoil said they could probably form joint venture. Is it still on the table? And how are you planning to use that gas? Probably for LNG? Mr. Cherepanov, we received a license for one of the blocks there. Right now, we have license commitments that we shall honor. Those include re-evaluation of reserves in place and exploration that needs to be done. The exploration plan will be approved in July. And in accordance with the parameters of the project, we plan to start drilling the first well next year and to complete a lot of service work in terms of 3D seismic surveys. After those efforts are completed, I think that we will complete the geologic exploration closer to 2022, and after that we will reevaluate and again book the balance, the reserves. Under the existing license, we are not obliged to commission that field in any time soon. We are only obliged to carry out exploration and reevaluation of reserves. So certainly we have enough time to do that in a mode that is comfortable for us with the budget that we are comfortable with to make sure that the field is commissioned after 2022. But certainly we did have plans to engage partners in that work. We have made significant progress in discussing that project with Lukoil. We have a common study, joint study for that field. Basically, the oil reserves, the oil part of that field, was estimated and analyzed from the point of view of Lukoil's infrastructure, while the gas part of that field was analyzed in terms of its supplies to the Bavanenkovo-Ukhta pipeline. Right now, there are certain technical parameters of that field and its financial parameters for the partners are still under consideration, so we are not completely sure we can go ahead with the initial plan with our partners. So right now we have our own option to supply that gas through the gas supply system that is related to the Uhtyrsky field to sort of revive that field and to look into what that field can offer as a sort of a regional underground gas storage facility for us to be able to store gas on the site locally. And in order to achieve the right technological parameters in terms of pressure and so on, we can potentially add gas from other fields. So those are a lot of concepts that are being discussed virtually right now. So the question of whether we will be doing that together with our partners or on our own is open to discussion right now. Interfax. Gazprom was planning to look into the dependence between the movement of earth movements in the Uringoy field and the production figures. Do you see any link now? And will you have to choose any limitations in your operations? Are you referring to the situation we had in the Netherlands, in Groningen? Let me say that we are operating in accordance with the production plan, and what you have been asking about is actually included in that plan. In accordance with the existing license and with the Russian laws on industrial safety, we shall continue that effort going forward. And actually, Gazprom has all the capabilities to use the modern capacities to do that for supervision and so on. We have the smarter system. We use space equipment to monitor the surface of the Earth where our fields operate. And based on those results, we see no critical parameters in there. And we monitor not only the fields that we have, but also our gas trunk lines. So we monitor the changes compared to the initial position of our gas trunk lines. We have everything under control, and we also use our satellites, and Gazprom space systems are engaged in that. Let me add that the matter of monitoring changes in the Earth crust, that is something that Gazprom has been doing for quite a long time. It's actually the history of the gas industry, because that's a commitment that is included in our contracts. We are obliged to sign annual contracts with specialized services providers that complete that monitoring. We have been monitoring changes for around 30 years, and we can say that there is no correlation to gas production. There are certain changes, but they are within the requirements and criteria to foundations or to stability of buildings and structures and so on. Those include criteria that apply to the permanent frost and so on, but globally, no tectonic processes impose any problems or threats to us. In addition to remote processes we have had, we have discussed right now, we also have geotags that we also use, and changes are minimal. And today, Gazprom is perfectly positioned to do that using space equipment, and that's our advantage compared to other companies. So we have everything that is required. You're not asking about gas motor fuel. Why is that? So apparently, that's not something that's interesting for you. Two sections of the Grazovets-Slavyansk pipeline are to be completed by 2022, and Turzhok 2, which is approximately in that period. Did I get it right that you are following that schedule for you to be able to have supplies in Nord Stream by the end of 2019, especially considering that no capacities that are required in Germany will be in place? Well, I believe you have more information about the German capacities that I have. Let us not comment on what may be taking place in Germany. As for the Uhta-Turzhok 2 pipeline, last year, we commissioned 570 kilometers of the linear section. Today, we're in the final stage of the installation and construction works of the linear section, around 4.5 kilometers in terms of welding. So this year, we're commissioning 985 kilometers of the linear section. That's what will be commissioned this year. After that, the capacities will be growing accordingly. We will be building compressor stations next year in accordance with the schedule to meet demand from consumers in the northwestern region, and also to supply gas via Nord Stream 2. All the design documents are ready. So we will be implementing those projects in accordance with our schedule to ramp up capacities in Nord Stream 2, and also in supplies to consumers in the northwestern region. That's important because there will be quite a lot of projects going on stream in that region. One of them is a project by Eurochem, which is commissioned this year, so we will be there to cover that demand. It's the so-called red chain, That's an integrated project that is related to the development of the Gastronclines, Serpukhov, Leningrad, Kotlo-Yarva, Leningrad, and compressor stations along those routes. Those projects are also in the stage of completion of installation and construction works. So we are nearing the stage when the works will be ready, definitely by the end of the third quarter. And the second part of that will be supplies of gas from the Bavanenkovo to meet the demand of prospective customers in the northwestern region. Last year, Gazprom ended its contract for 20 billion rubles with a number of construction companies, mainly small and medium-sized businesses. And this year, you tendered a number of contracts for around 10 billion rubles for small and medium-sized businesses, but eventually no contracts were signed. What is the rationale behind that? Was it Gazprom's decision or decision of the contractors? Anton, thank you, but that's outside of the scope of the press conference. Here I can only say that the projects being implemented by Gazprom are quite large, let me describe it like that. And there are quite few companies that can implement the projects of that scale, and it's not a unique feature of Gazprom, because the same is true for Rosneft and Transneft, but certainly we are a much larger company. So for companies to operate at Gazprom's assets and capacities, those businesses need to have quite high volumes and businesses. What are your plans to invest in geological exploration in Russia and abroad, and what is the total amount that you plan? Last year, Gazprom Group, that is Gazprom and Gazpromneft, invested a total of 86.7 billion rubles on geologic exploration. 65.6 billion rubles of that was invested into the gas business, so 21.1 billion rubles came to the Gazpromneft business. Also, around 10 billion rubles were allocated to subsidiaries. As for the year 2018, the figures are roughly the same, so that's around 83 billion rubles that will be spent this year. Thank you. Let's switch back to Moscow. Energy intelligence, please. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a follow-up question. You've said that the planned gas processing plant in Ust-Luga will be using gas from the Novoringoyskoye field. But I'm afraid that the production there is not planned at 45 billion cubic meters. Does that mean that somewhere in the northern corridor that ethane-containing gas will be mixed with other gas? So if that is true, what will be the approximate mixture? By what amount will the ethane content go down? Thank you. Indeed, I've already mentioned that. Let me repeat that. Our contract commitments in terms of ethane content are included in documents that we have. So those are very strict parameters in terms of what our gas contains. That's 10.9% of content. Part of the deposits there have higher content, that's more than 12.5%. And some of the deposits demonstrate around 9.5% content. So the average of that, of around 10.9%, is what we include in our documents and technology. Our technology provides for a constant content of our gas, and we're not planning to have any mixtures. As I've been saying, we will be installing a separate gas transmission system. That gas will be coming from two streams near one of the compressor stations. And after that, it will be collected into one string and then follow the northern corridor to Ust-Luga. So the 45 billion cubic meters will be coming from Nadym Purtas. Any other questions from Moscow? The last question from me, if I may, again about the Bomvanenko field. When in 2022, in late 2022, the field reaches its design capacity, what will be the maximum daily output? So from 315 billion, what is the amount you need to cover? That's 115 billion cubic meters annually. And in terms of daily output, that's 365 million per day. Thank you. Any questions here in St. Petersburg? The final question from Vedomosti. Again, a follow-up question. The second slide of the presentation shows Kamchatka as one of the key areas for geological exploration activities. Although earlier you said that you had certain issues with your license to engage in exploration in Kamchatka. And also a question about the turnover of your gas transmission system. More than 60% of those assets are quite old. That's around 60 years old and older. I know that you have a special program in place to replace those assets effectively. But still, you have 60,000 kilometers of gas pipelines that have quite significant wear and tear. Where are those pipelines located? In Kamchatka, we are not considering the Western Kamchatka block. We asked that license to be suspended. So we are referring to Noyabrsk 1, Noyabrsk 2, blocks that we received from Rosneedra, and that's where we're planning to have our exploration activities to supply gas to the region. So we need to maintain our existing production, so we are ramping up our exploration. As for Zapadno-Kamchatsky block, we are planning to suspend that. Our plans also include the construction of a new compressor station and reconstruction of part of the existing equipment, so quite a lot of work to do there, I mean, in Kamchatka. As for the aging of our gas transmission system, Gazprom works to improve the reliability of its assets. The accident rate is quite low, even compared to gas transmission systems of other countries. So we are a leader in terms of reliability. Last year, in our gas trunk lines, only had 3 accidents, just 3, compared to what we had a decade ago. We had around 10 accidents. So we've apparently done a lot in terms of improving the reliability of our gas transmission. And all our efforts are in line with our strategy to ensure reliability. And that includes a variety of areas, capital, major overhauls, construction of new assets, ongoing repairs and maintenance. All that combined provides the result we need. Indeed, we have a lot of gas trunk lines that were constructed more than 40 years ago. And they have certain drawbacks in their valve equipment. And they also have 90-degree connections that are hard to inspect. And we will be working with those bottlenecks to improve logistics and to make sure those pipelines remain operational. You've mentioned it's more than 60,000 kilometers of aging equipment, but according to our information, that's 45,000. And that's the Central Asia Center to Yekaterinburg and to Moscow. There are old sections also in the route to St. Petersburg and Ukhtar. But for example, the Ring gas pipeline in the Moscow region. It is being upgraded and repaired on an ongoing basis because it's the core part of ensuring reliable supplies to not only Moscow but the adjacent regions in central Russia. So we're quite active in those repairs. Part of those pipelines will be 342 kilometers that will be eliminated as part of the reduction of our capacities. So it's an integrated matter. And where we have the opportunity to connect consumers to new corridors with removing old corridors, we do that. And in other cases, we remove the status of gas trunk line and use them in another capacity. But that's actually a very complex and challenging work with a lot of experts involved in that. And the result is the ongoing decline in the accident rate. We have a project to supply gas to the Leningrad region, to Eurocham. And it's not only about Eurocham, but also gas supplies to the entire Leningrad region. Because in addition to supplying gas to Eurocham, we will be improving the reliability of our supplies in the entire region. And the same is true for other region, for other regions. For example, the pipeline that we've mentioned in the Moscow region, that's a priority for us because a lot of consumers use that pipeline. So we need to ensure it is operational and reliable. Does that answer your question? Thank you, colleagues. The press conference is now over. The next one will be held on the 16th of May.